There's a tradition in, or a practice in Buddhism called dedication of merit. And it's the practice of taking whatever benefits that we get from our practice, from our intentions, from the way we live our lives, taking those benefits, the unseen benefits, the known benefits, and dedicating them, offering them, giving them away for the benefit of other beings, people we know, people we don't know, any beings anywhere. And it's quite unusual traditionally in Buddhism for Buddhists to do any kind of practice or any kind of event without this kind of dedication of merit, without offering themselves, in a sense, their own practice in life for the benefit of others. And it's a beautiful practice. I think it's a very profound practice, both because of the ways in which it conditions and changes us, connecting our practice with that of other people, but also because I believe that it helps other people, other beings. I don't know exactly the avenue, the channel of cause and effect, but I believe that there's a tremendous chain of cause and effect that goes between us and the people we meet and the people those people meet, and goes onwards. And there are unseen ways in which this dedication of merit might work. And so what I'd like to do is to start today to dedicate the merit of our sitting here together and this talk and our gathering here, to get it dedicate whatever benefit that comes from this gathering, to offer ourselves, in a sense, a part of ourselves for the benefit of all the victims of Tuesday's tragedy, both the ones that died and for the ones who were injured, for all the people who are working so hard, have been working so hard in the rescue attempts, all the people who survived the death of loved ones or missing loved ones, the husband, wives, children, parents. I'd like to dedicate the merit, our merit, and our thoughts and our best wishes also to all the people who now have responsibility to make decisions about what to do from here on, both decisions in terms of rescue and the immediate repair work, but also those government leaders who have responsibility to make monumental choices now at this point. It's a phenomenal responsibility to be sitting with the decisions that have to be made now, given what happened. And I'd like to dedicate the merit for the well-being, for the peaceful heart, the transformed heart of the people who perpetrated this, both the people who died in the airplanes, the terrorists, and also for the people who might have planned it, if it wasn't them themselves. That somehow that the life that we live, the life choices we make, the practices we do, are not just for ourselves and for our own well-being and healing, but it's also for the well-being and healing of all beings everywhere. Buddhism puts a lot of emphasis on the possibility of change, possibility of liberative change, the possibility of changing a heart from hate to love, And we want to be very careful, certainly not to stand in the way of the possibility of that change for anybody, any individual in the world. But also, we want to be very careful not stand in the way for our own change. Say it this way, that it's been said now many times since Tuesday morning that we live now in a changed world. It's a new world. And what that means is it's changed on many different levels. I believe each of us has been changed. And some of us have been changed more than others. But I think everyone who knows about this event last Tuesday has been changed. I think it's very important to allow ourselves to be changed. And perhaps it's even more important at this point to allow ourselves to be continually changed, to continue the change. One of the dangers is that we get changed in some way, and then we get stuck there, that we get hardened in that place. And one of the functions of Buddhist practice is to encourage us to stay open for continual change, to let the impact of these kinds of events to be a continuous process of change, rather than the hardening into some new position or new stance or new feeling that doesn't move at all. And part of the function of practice is to help us to and dedicate us, support us, encourage us to stay open enough to continue that process of change. On a Thursday evening, we had a gathering, a regular Thursday evening gathering, with many people came. And mostly we spent the evening having people speak about what they felt. I spoke a little bit about what I had witnessed, which many of you had witnessed, and what I had felt in seeing that. And then we opened the floor mostly to an hour or so of people doing the same thing, people just sharing what they saw and what they felt. Trying to avoid, I suggested or encouraged people to avoid trying to express their opinion, their explanations, their interpretations of what had happened, but rather to stay there in the realm of what they saw, kind of witnessing, staying with what they saw, and then witnessing how they're actually feeling. And I felt at that time that it was very important for us, it's still important for us, not to be ahead of ourselves or not to harden around opinions and ideas and explanations, because often that gets in the way of the continual process of change, the continual process of healing and working and reflection and deepening understanding of ourselves and the world around us that needs to happen in a situation like that. I was quite filled with grief when I saw what happened on Tuesday. I was filled with fear. There were times on Tuesday where, for myself, I felt it was important to somehow bear witness to this event. And even though I didn't want to watch it on television, I watched it more than my gut desire was. But I felt that I had to witness it, I had to really see the truth of what was going on there. And there are times where I turned away. I just saw these images on television, and just without even thinking about it, it was quite instinctive. It was so powerful. And by the afternoon, I was in tears. There were times when I started crying. And since then, at times when I've heard something, I've cried. And I felt filled with a lot of fear at what I've seen and heard. And there are things that I've heard about what's gone on in New York City that I would not want to repeat to anyone. Certainly, I don't feel any desire to repeat it here to you, because it just seems so painful just to even say it. I understand that an event like this is kind of like a monumental shock, earthquake, fissure in our hearts, in our psyche. And we have to be very respectful of how powerful this kind of thing is. One of the ways of hardening is to turn away from that immensity of the pain. And there's a lot of ways of turning away from the pain. Numbing out, avoidance, ignorance, but also lashing out. And we've had a lot of examples in our country of people lashing out with acts of violence in return against innocent people who did nothing at all. I think we need to be very respectful of how big of a shock this kind of thing is to our psyche. And one of the things that that means for me is that we need to bear witness to what we're feeling and be very accepting of it. For those of us who feel tremendous anger and hate because of this, we don't want to be very careful with that anger, and in a sense accept it in the kind of way we talk about acceptance in mindfulness practice. Acceptance doesn't mean condoning it. It doesn't mean acting on it. And it doesn't mean giving into it, indulging in it. It doesn't mean turning away from it. Acceptance means We don't judge ourselves negatively for having these feelings. We don't push them away or push part of ourselves away for having it, but rather we allow them to surface, and then we use the power of mindfulness to not be caught by them, or to try not to be caught by them. The effort of not to be caught by our anger is very, very significant. And so what the practice offers is an opportunity for us to feel, to allow us to feel anything that we're feeling. And in the course of the days, there's kind of often a kaleidoscope of different kind of feelings I think many of you have had, and I've had. And not to judge ourselves or feel one is better than the other, but give lots of room to allow yourself to be this way, so the process of change can continue. Two different people who experience the same devastating loss. If one person kind of takes the stiff upper lip and kind of proceeds with life and tries to get along without really addressing their pain, will live wounded for the rest of their life. And the people who, even though the pain might be overwhelming, finds, even if it's very small, little kind of incremental steps, little bit at a time, opening to the pain and opening to their feelings, will slowly find a way to achieve some kind of healing. They'll never be the same, but some kind of resolution. I've been present many times for people who've had horrendous suffering in their lives. They often come on retreats. And I've actually sat with people for whom I didn't expect any change to happen or anytime soon. I just really didn't know what I could do for people when they had such tremendous grief and sadness. A mother whose daughter commits suicide when her daughter was 14, and which happened this year on retreat when I was on retreat. And it's very hard. I didn't know what I could say or do, and the only thing I could do was to try to offer as much presence as I could, to be present for her, because it was hard for her to be present for herself. And so to offer compassionate presence and to hold her. And she cried on my lap. She put her head on my lap for a long time, maybe 45 minutes, and sobbed. And by the end of the 2 weeks of retreat, she was transformed. She was a transformed woman. She did not know she was going to be so changed. This was the second retreat I'd been with her on. And she attributed it a lot to the fact that someone, in this case myself, had been willing to be present for her, for what had happened, that helped her to be present and let this cascade of feelings tumble forth, rather than bottling them up or having them somehow filtered through all the ideas and words and that are confusing her mind. And now she works as a grief counselor for other people who have lost loved ones like this. So to give ourselves lots of opportunities to feel and not to feel bad about how we feel. It's much better to recognize our anger and be compassionate towards it than it is to ignore it, because ignored anger all too easily produces more anger. Ignored fear produces more fear, encourages the roots of fear. And to allow these things to come, and each of us to know how much we can handle, and if we need to back off and reach out for help or turn the television off or do whatever we need to do. It's really important to find some way to allow ourselves to continue to be changed, to recognize we have been changed, and then allow the change to continue. Yesterday, this is maybe nonsense. I don't know quite what to say. I'm kind of struggling about what to say here today, because how do we handle something like this? And part of my dilemma this morning and what to do was how much should I speak and how much should I let you speak, and try my best to find my way through that. And so you all, each of you, I think, are in a different place and different need, and I don't know how to meet all of you and your needs, but you'll bear with me as I try to do my best here. I spent the day in an emergency ward, and one of the things that was very moving for me there was simple compassion and care of the nurses and doctors there. It was very heartening. It was very moving for me to feel it. It was very encouraging in many ways just to feel these little acts of compassion of these people who were trying so hard to help so many people. And I thought about all the people in New York who are helping now, who are trying to offering their whatever they can, the heroic efforts on Tuesday of people who dashed into burning buildings, and people who an hour earlier, 10 minutes earlier, were people like us, you know, no different than us, had no thoughts, you know, if this had happened in San Francisco rather than New York, they'd be sitting in our shoes, they'd be like us, you know, looking at the television and wondering, you know, what can we do now? But they were there, and so they acted. And I think it's very important, for me it's very important, to remember that kind of the response that we've seen outpouring, that ability to respond with compassion and care is something that is in each of us. It's in our society around us. And given the opportunity, given the need, many of us would have responded the same way. We might not have responded that way if we had time to think about it. And many of us think we are what we think. And so we kind of limit ourselves who we are. But in the face of the immediacy of some real disaster, ordinary people become phenomenal heroes. A friend of mine emailed me, he was working as a volunteer at so-called Ground Zero, and he says they have more volunteers than they can handle. People are kind of lining up on the periphery and wanting to help. And it's just phenomenal that there are, that this kind of this exists. So how have each of us been changed by the events of Tuesdays? And how will we allow ourselves to continue to be changed? How are there ways in which each of us resists being changed? How is it each of us hardens in any kind of way? And what is the degree of dedication, devotion, intention each of us has towards softening that hardening? What's the dedication each of us has to really allow this to change us? I think it takes a lot of courage to allow something like this to really change who we are as individuals. And in a few days, and in a few weeks, I think there's going to be very easy for us to have a momentum of wanting to come back to how we were, to kind of continue life, and kind of the old habits kind of creep back, and other kinds of concerns that from the perspective of this week might seem quite petty, come back. My hope for all of us is that we allow this really to change us, and change us for the better. I think there's a tremendous amount of good in the world. There's a tremendous possibility of something, of love, of kindness, of non-hate, compassion. And I don't know how well love, compassion, forces of peace can balance the opposites. But I feel that's what there is to do, is for us to find those resources within ourselves. For me, one of the basic teachings of Buddhism is that our suffering, our fear, our hate, our anger, our despair, are processes within us that are held in place with effort, with processing, with intention, with work, in a sense. And it's exhausting to do that. And in that, there are processes that come together, the conditioned phenomena that get built and get created, that held together a certain way, for the most part, that it's possible to get down to the very roots of our psyche and release the effort that's holding that suffering and hate and fear in place. And that the innate core of who we are is a core that's quite beautiful, that's peaceful, that's loving and compassionate. Because love and compassion and peace are not conditioned. They're not processes that come together and require us to hold them. We don't have to hold them in place. We don't have to make effort to make them there. They're just there, kind of by themselves. So a few more words. I believe it's very important to for those of us who come to Buddhism for some kind of response, some kind of holding of it, this kind of event. There's a few things. One is, Buddhism is both contains within it both a realism and an optimism, and the realism is recognizes what's really going on. It recognizes the suffering and violence that exists in this world, and this has existed for as long as humans have been around. And one of the things I feel Buddhists can offer, I hope Buddhists will offer to the world, is an unswerving ability, willingness to be a witness for the reality of what our life is like. And what happened in New York is so close to home for us and so powerful for us. But I think, as many of you know, it's not unusual, this kind of event. I mean, it's unusual in the magnitude of it. But these kinds of things, in small and big ways, happen in our society, in our country, in our world, all the time, over and over and over again. And so to see that and be willing to be changed by that and affected by that, to be present for it and learn, have the ability to be present for it, to have that kind of realistic approach. But Buddhism is also optimistic. It's optimistic because it's possible to follow through on our intentions to be kind, compassionate, loving, and peaceful. It's possible to be changed. It's possible to be changed for the better, and it's possible to change the world for the better. If we only have the realism, we'll succumb to despair. If we only have the optimism and the message of hope, then it'll be shallow. We won't understand where the locus, where the ground of the spiritual life really resides. And we really need to have both, the realism and the optimism together. So each of us sits here today with heaviness, with something quite serious in our own hearts. I don't want to offer you hope or beauty or some kind of wonderful message that changes the heaviness of that. And I would like to give you a chance to speak now a little bit. But also, I don't want to leave you with the feeling that this is all there is the heaviness, even though we have to see it and hold it. There is actually some, I don't know if hope is the right word, but we can be, what we do can make a difference. And how we respond can make a difference. If we had been in New York City, we would have helped in some way or other, I think. So I was there in the hospital yesterday, and I ran into a friend of mine. And he had received an email from a man who was Pakistani Muslim who had been in a trade towers when the planes struck. And somehow he found his way out. I think that he was helping other people out. And he found himself out in the street just as the building was collapsing. And he ran. And he talked about the dust and the glass and apparently small pieces of broken metal flying all over. And in his running and in the mayhem, he fell. And he was being covered by all this dust and stuff. And then he felt an arm reach down and pick him up, or hand, pick him up under his shoulder and yank him up and help him out of the mess. And it was an Hasidic Jew that helped him out. And somehow for me that was a very touching story of these, you know, in that kind of crisis, it didn't matter. They were just human beings that were helping each other. Whereas maybe in other circumstances, I don't know these two people, who knows, they could have been friends anyway. But symbolically, it's very important. But more important for me than telling a story which maybe has some kind of sentimental value and kind of moves us in some way, perhaps, for me is the fact that when I heard that story, I was moved. And that was actually the more important part of it. The fact that a story for me that was moved me, and that part of me that could be moved by that, by the symbolism of that kind of story, I think speaks to the better part of each of us. Speaks to that part that can really feel empathy and compassion for those people around us. We can make a difference in the world. And I hope that each of us gets changed by this so that we can make a difference that's for the better of everyone. So that's maybe all I should say. And I wonder what you'd like to say about how you've been changed or what you feel like you'd like to share about the impact of this kind of event on your life. There's a very important opportunity with this event. And the opportunity is certainly an opportunity for the leaders of the world to figure out something. So there's an opportunity for every community and every individual. And I hope that it's an opportunity we use wisely. In the Buddhist tradition, there's also, aside from a practice of dedication, there's a practice of loving kindness, which many Buddhists are doing it during this week, offering the loving kindness in all directions. But there's also a very significant practice called forgiveness. Forgiveness practice. And forgiveness practice has, it's very interesting the way it's worded. There's three phrases that are said as part of the forgiveness practice. And the first is, for whatever harm others have caused me, may I forgive them. And then, for whatever harm I have caused others, may they forgive me. No, whatever, what did I say right? And third one is, for whatever harm I have caused myself, may I forgive myself. And the significance, one of the significances of this is that Buddhist practice encourages us to look for responsibility in all directions and not to kind of settle on one direction for blame or for responsibility, but to look for it in all possible directions. And one of the opportunities in an event like this is to in a sense, not to take blame exactly, but to look for where the responsibility lies and to appreciate that it can lie in all directions. That we don't have to get, one of the ways to get stuck is to look only in one direction, to look in very narrowly. It's very easy to kind of choose to be black and white about this, and we want to have, you know, the bad guy we can kind of easily point to, or the good guy we can point to. But to see these things, the forgiveness practice for me, at least for me, encourages me to hold everyone, myself and everyone, together as part of the same family. And so I very much liked what it was Jerry who said he wishes there was a world symbol rather than an American symbol of just America. There is, you know, the flag that we had in front of our house for quite a while was hanging, was the flag or the photograph of the Earth from the moon. So let's end with a short sitting. Short period of quiet. There are centrifugal forces in our minds propelling us outwards, sometimes in ways that blind us from what's actually happening in the present. We get caught up in thoughts of future, past, distant places, and we lose track of what's happening here. We don't want to avoid what's happening elsewhere, or the future, or the past, but it's very important to remember to begin the practice, to begin our show of loving kindness and compassion, mindfulness, right here with ourselves. So to sit here and feel what's happening in your body, in your heart, in your minds, right now. If you can see through or behind all the thoughts you have about what's going to happen or what has happened, to the immediacy of what it's like for your body and your heart to hold the feelings and thoughts. To feel the ache, the pain, the tension, the heaviness, the brokenheartedness. And then to meet that with tenderness, with loving kindness, with our goodwill. To have a goodwill, thoughts of goodwill, of loving kindness towards ourself and our body, our hearts, our minds. Even if it's just very subtle, gentle wind of tenderness and kindness, it's important. To have self-compassion. Just like I was I witnessed compassion and care yesterday in the emergency room. That care and compassion is something we each of us can bring towards ourselves. Not to push away or deny what we're feeling, but as a way of holding it. And then to expand the loving kindness, our goodwill, to those people sitting here in the room. A significant gathering of people who've been moved and affected, who maybe feel very many same things that you feel. And let there be a tenderness and kindness, thoughts of goodwill, that these immediate people around you, the people you have now for these moments, these minutes, who are within reach, you can open your eyes and see them if at the end of the sitting, that may these people be safe, healthy, may they be happy. There are many ways of responding to tragedies of Tuesday, but if it doesn't include the people you're going to encounter in your daily life, family, friends, strangers, as you go about in the supermarket or the freeways or anywhere. I don't know how valuable it's going to be, significant. So you might extend your tenderness and care out to your community here in the peninsula, in the Bay Area, to those people you might be encountering for the rest of the day or the next days. And to wish goodwill to them, your loving kindness. May they be happy. May they be safe. May they be healthy. May they be peaceful. And then there's the families and friends of the victims of Tuesday's attacks. Maybe some of them are here in this room. Chances are that many of you know people who've lost people or have victims on Tuesday. And may all those survivors, family and friends of the victims, may our thoughts of goodwill, of tenderness and kindness, extend out to them. May they be safe. May they be healthy. May they be free of their suffering. And then there's all the victims, the fatalities, the people who've died, and the thousands of people who were injured. Some who injuries were light, and some who in critical care right now. Some perhaps who are still under the rubble, waiting to be rescued. May our tenderness, our compassion, our love, our goodwill extend to them. May they be safe. May they be free of suffering. May they be healed. And may those people who have responsibilities now that require them to make decisions, government leaders, may they do it carefully and wisely. But let our tenderness, our kindness, our efforts to create peace in the world extend out to them. May they be safe. May they be healthy. May they be happy. May they be peaceful. And for all the people in the world who have caused this event, the hijackers, the planners, And the people who have taken delight in this event that has happened. May we not banish them from our hearts, but may this tenderness within us, the intentions of kindness and goodwill, find a way, maybe a difficult way, awkward way, to include them in our thoughts of goodwill. May those who hate learn to love. May those who are afraid learn to feel safe. May those who grieve may they be healed. The Buddha once said, hate does not end through hate. By non-hate alone does hate end. This is the eternal truth. May each of us discover the resources within us that we can act in the world with non-hate and love. May all beings be happy. May all beings be safe. May all beings be healthy. May all beings be peaceful. May all beings everywhere be happy.